Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Dale,
dale, don, dale. Sing it. Perreo Friday.
Perreo Friday.
That's right. Perreo Friday.
I really love this song.
El Viernes Perreo. ¿Entiendes?
I don't know.
All right.
All right. Okay.
Ira is there on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 1,500 Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Ira Winderman, he covers the Miami Heat and the NBA for the Sun Sentinel. Ira is powered by Anajar and Levine. Accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE, 1-800-747-3733. Do you have the proper introduction for Ira Winderman? Ira Winderman, Ira Winderman, from the Sun Sentinel. Ira Winderman, Ira Winderman, he covers the NBA.
You're speaking in tongues.
All right, I don't know what's going on there.
I love it.
Ira Winderman is there. Hello, Ira.
And remember, in honor of your new producer, I'm now Ira Hondro, but either way.
I mentioned that to him yesterday. Okay. You had texted me. Yeah, Ira Winderman is now Ira Hondro.
And also, Hawk, I just want to answer the three questions from your first segment today. Just get them out of the way, okay?
Okay.
First answer, John Sally.
All right. Okay. Appreciate that.
Second answer, sour cream donut, the preference here.
Hold on. Sure. On International Donut Day, your top choice of donut is a sour cream donut? I've never even heard of it.
It has that nice glaze. It's sort of a cake donut with a little twang. And I know Channing spoke about this at the top of the show. The problem with the Boston cream or the jelly donut is, look, most of us are sneaking donuts when our wives aren't looking and then coming home and going, no, I'm hungry for dinner. It's all good. The problem is when you drive with a Boston cream or a jelly donut, it's an accident waiting to happen. So the filled donut really doesn't pass the driving test. So I have issues with that.
All right, I have issues with driving with the donut. If you're gonna stop and get a donut, you eat the donut there. You don't have to eat it in your car.
I think a donut can be mobile, so I'm gonna disagree with you there.
Where do you get a sour cream donut though? I like sour cream. I've just never heard of that.
Right next door. Go to the Dunkin' Donuts on the way home tonight. Bring a nice dozen home for the family. The sour cream donut. Also underrated is the 7-Eleven sour cream donut.
Did you know that there were sour cream donuts?
No, I really didn't.
I'm telling you, and I'm a donut aficionado, Ira Hondro. I've never heard of this.
Now you know. And my third answer to your opening segment today was, my thought is this. Rainbow sprinkles are only for kids.
Yes.
But I think a chocolate sprinkle isn't okay for an adult.
Incorrect. It's wax. I mean, why would you put extra wax on an item?
I just think it works better than, I think any adult who goes in and goes, oh, rainbow sprinkles are so colorful. No, that doesn't work. I think a chocolate sprinkle is a more mature sprinkle.
But would you ever go somewhere? You know, I mean, you're a Dairy Queen. I'd like a vanilla cone and I'd like sprinkles on it.
Well, the problem is, if they know who I am, no. If not, yeah, it's an indulgence.
Really? Sprinkles are an indulgence.
Yeah. So if they don't say, hey, you're the guy from the radio station, I might have a chocolate sprinkle. But if they know me, I would never touch a chocolate sprinkle. Just dip the cone in the butterscotch.
Sprinkles on a donut like Solana? Solana's 25 years old. He's eating sprinkles on a donut.
But again, for me, the mobility factor, where the sprinkles are going to go all over the car. The difference is my wife drives a car that is pristine. Literally 3 years later, we'll still have the new car smell. She's unbelievable taking care of her car. My car is a wreck. My car is like, you know, like I drove it to Garbage Mountain and coming back. So I'm always running the risk of something being identified, this bag, this wrapper. I literally still drive the car of a bachelor.
And Ira, well, I have one problem with what you said. You get donuts on the way home from work at 6, 7 at night?
You know what? You're a little hungry. You've been in the studio. You feel you owe yourself an indulgence. You played 2 hours of tennis. you're about to drop dead? Yeah, Channing, I do. You got an issue with that?
No, I put it that way.
It's possible that he calls his treats donuts, if you understand.
Oh, yeah.
Stop off, get a quick donut, and then head home.
And the crazy thing is, okay, so I gave you three answers, and you absolutely glossed over John Sally.
That was my follow-up. That was my follow-up. So John Sally, huh?
You
all right.
You know what? If you Google John Sally and the word that begins with a P, there actually is a TMZ video of him discussing it. So I would never tell tales out of turn either direction, but this is a case where John Sally actually did a TMZ interview describing the wordplay.
He's the Milton Berle of NBA players.
You know what? I want to be so careful because I'm going to come back on the station next week, but I'm just going to leave this be. But just go online. You'll
fair
find out
enough,
all you
enough.
Need to know.
Ira Winderman covers the Heat and the NBA for the Sun Sentinels. I've made this point for a couple days.
Sure.
I think Steve Kerr, by not allowing Klay to play on Wednesday night, was arrogant. He essentially, I mean, you're not going to beat that Toronto team with just Steph Curry, unless Draymond, I guess, plays lights out basketball and Boogie Cousins did what he did in game two, I guess. Like, you need everything to go right. And I think if Klay tells you he wants to go and it's not a major injury, which it's obviously not if he's playing tonight, I think it was a bad decision.
Well, first of all, I'm surprised Channing, when you talked about it in an opening segment, didn't mention more how a hamstring or a groin is the kind of injury that can get a lot worse in a hurry if you don't let it sort of heal to a certain degree. So unless you're literally walking another man's steps, you don't know about the groin or the hamstring, or if it's one, you know, step away from a tear or something. Klay knows that, and the team's, you know, muscular therapists know that. I've always felt no matter the result of Game 3, Game 4 determines this series for this reason. If the Warriors win tonight and it goes to 2-2, they know if they win in Toronto, they can come back home and close it up. If the series goes 3-1, Toronto knows they can go home on Monday and in front of their crazy fans close out the series. So I think Game 4, in a way, always set up a little bit more. You're right, there was a certain arrogance. And really, if they make that transition layup and instead it isn't blocked and come back with a 3 by Danny Green the other way, that could have been a completely different game. Yes, a degree of arrogance. I also think they were waiting on Kevin Durant on the hope that maybe he can come back and rest Klay a little bit more. We now know that Durant is back. We now know that Klay is playing. But I want to ask you this, Channing, because you've been through this with groins and hamstrings. Won't you sort of be keeping an eye on Klay Thompson to see if he has that explosion or that burst to know early in the game whether we're going to see the real Klay Thompson?
Oh, yeah, to see if he can really do what you've seen him do and seen him play at a high level, and also the fatigue. Because it might feel good in quarter one, but now he starts running up and down that court. It gets fatigued, and whatever was hurting, now it's accentuated.
But I think we're doing something here, Ira. Imagine it was the Heat when LeBron was here, and he, quote-unquote, tweaked his hamstring, and he didn't play game three. He would be vilified by every fan and every media member, just like, you know, Mark Jackson, you know, sometimes you got to tell your body, not now, body. If he wanted to play and didn't end up playing in game three, people would have crushed him. Hey, it's the final, suck it up.
Oh, you're right. Or they would have crushed Eric Spoelstra for not letting him play in the role of Steve Kerr. Or Pat Riley for telling Spoelstra he couldn't play him. You're right. But these are the lovable, huggable Warriors. So everything is dissipated from when you were sort of the anti kind of team that the Heat were. You're 1,000% correct. And sort of the equivalency of this is you watched the Stanley Cup final game last night, and Zdeno Chara goes out there with a broken jaw. He's wearing this oversized helmet, and he's throwing crazy body checks during his shifts, which shows you the difference between hockey guys. So yes, Hawk, I agree there's a certain arrogance. But I think there's also the Warriors believe this in themselves. They can win three straight games anytime they darn well please. So I think that was their thought process going in. Okay, Toronto threw their best punch. We're at home. We get this to 2-2. All of a sudden, the Raptors are running scared on Monday night because they know if they lose at home, they may never get home again. So I think that's part of the thinking, and we'll know early. What I'm curious is, the equivalency from the Bruins Blues game last night. Is there a way that Toronto can do something to Clay? Are you going to run him off screens? Are you going to sort of run a second guy at him so he has to make a quick change of direction? Like, I wonder if there's something you can do if you're Toronto to manipulate the situation in your favor. Get him on a screen so he has to guard a quicker point guard, Lowry or Van Fleet or something like that. So I am curious. I think there's going to sort of be a game within the game tonight.
And Ira, one of my biggest takeaways from game three was the Warriors' defense. Is that all Clay? Because their defense was terrible.
Yeah, Clay is a really good defender, and I think has always gotten underrated because everyone sees him as a shooter. That's number one, Channing. Number two is this notion that DeMarcus Cousins was going to come back and repeat his game two performance. He is slow and sluggish, which he's always sort of been. He's a bigger guy, but I think the fact that they couldn't rely on him, that hurts. Kayvon Looney's done a real good job defensively in the playoffs. People lose sight of that. He's out for this series. And remember how people were noting in the series against the Cavaliers, the finals, the last couple of years, how Kevin Durant is so underrated as a defender. So you could make an argument that they're without two of their better defenders and still trying to play defense. I think no Clay, no Durant, no Kayvon Looney, and no real rim deterrence right now is a factor for Golden State. They are far diminished from the championship team we've seen before.
Hey, quickly, and I heard you explain it on the radio earlier this week for people that may not have. Ira Winderman from the Sun Sentinel is with us. The Heat, you know, they might trade for J.R. Smith. I heard you explaining they're not even going to assign him a jersey number.
Right.
Can you just explain for Heat fans that might be looking casually?
He made this deal with Cleveland. Basically, what it'll mean is J.R. Smith's due about, I think it's $16 million next season, but only $3 million are guaranteed if he's cut by June 30th. So you can wash away a salary cap mistake. So you can trade a Deion Waiters or a James Johnson with filler, but you'd have to trade something with it. So then the question becomes twofold. Number one, are you willing to give up this year's number 13 pick in order to erase a mistake? That's number one. Number two, are you willing to trade down with Cleveland, I believe drafted 26, and trade down that number of spots to wash a mistake? And here's number three. If you make a deal like that where you're saying we're trading Deion or James Johnson just to get rid of them at a premium, at a cost to us, is that Pat Riley finally acknowledging a mistake, which maybe you have to do, and saying, okay, it didn't work out the way I wanted. He told us his season-ending media session, no, these guys were injured, no, I felt I did the right thing. That's the hardest thing to do, I think, for anyone in management, to acknowledge failure and move on. The Nets did that with Alan Crabb when they traded him yesterday to the Hawks, and they gave up two first-round picks in order to erase a mistake. That's the hardest thing in the NBA. To erase your mistakes, it comes as a premium. I would hate for the Heat to give up their number 13 pick in this year's draft just to having admitted that Deion Waiters or James Johnson didn't work. On the other hand, if it gets you to $50 million or so in cap space next summer, which is more valuable to Pat Riley, a middle-of-the-pack draft choice this year or even more money to throw in his war chest in free agency next summer or the year after? And we know that cap space has always meant more to Pat, which is why I think this is a viable possibility.
All right, well, let me jump off the court on one of these stories that's been around the NBA Finals. The investor, Mark Stevens, he pushes Kyle Lowry. He gets fined $500,000
right,
and 1 year suspension. Is that enough punishment for what he did?
I think the Warriors have to make him sell his share also. You simply can't be part of our club if you're going to behave that way. What I would do is this. Once he sells his share, he ain't sitting in no front row seat in the new arena they have. They can sell those seats. I think he should be allowed to go to a game. I think he should be allowed in the second deck in the middle of the aisle if he wants to be a fan. I think he can only go so hard. Here's my question to you. Channing, if pushing someone in the workplace and treating them rudely is an issue, what happens if a player shoves a reporter doing an interview? We've seen this before, or something like that. Wouldn't that be an equivalency of someone trying to do their job in their workspace and then someone doing that? Does that mean the next player who does that, Jason Williams with the Memphis Grizzlies once grabbed the pen out of a reporter and created an issue? Are we really ready to ban people for life for workplace incidents? I think Adam Silver came out pretty strongly. I think the rest of this year's playoffs, all of next season, and the playoffs after are one thing. I think usually a team will trade or cut a player like that. So I think they simply make him give up his ownership stake. And then if he wants to be a fan, okay. Fans have had missteps before. If you make it a lifetime ban, then I think you're opening this real can of worms, maybe when one of your player misbehaves. Perfect example, does that mean Ron Artest really should have been banned for life after Malice at the Palace in Detroit, or Jermaine O'Neal or the others who went into the stands? So you're going to get into a real slippery slope if you're going to say anyone who interferes during a game, either way, during the work process, is banned for life. I don't know where that would end.
Yeah, I thought it was a fairly fair punishment, and I'm with you. He just needs to sell his share and not be part of it. I feel like he's been neutered, but I almost, yeah. And it has nothing to do with like a physical interaction, but I almost feel it's like Rob Pelinka in Los Angeles. Like, how can that guy continue to do his job and be taken seriously at what he does when he's kind of been shown to be a fraud? Like, at some point, you just got to cut your losses.
I think the guy in Golden State wouldn't want to be part of it because basically he wouldn't want to be seen in public anymore because, oh, you're the guy, just like Rob Pelinka. Oh, who's the next dead actor who's going to come talk to our players? Yeah, I think after a while, from a professional standpoint, everyone just moves on. Maybe he takes up a hobby of coin collecting and we sort of end it right there. You make these punishments too steep for owners, for other people. All of a sudden, you're going to look at player issues and go, okay, what about now?
You mentioned Chara last night. How about that no call that really cost, I think, maybe Boston the game last night, or at least a tie?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I was watching with my son, and we immediately went back to Trocheck was tripped, you know, and the Panthers and what happened in their last playoff series. And I don't know that we've got to go to the buzzer system or something. We have an eye in the sky. We have cameras. When it's that blatant,
I mean, it was egregious.
If I'm sitting in the league office in Toronto, why wouldn't you at least wipe out the goal? Think about this. Sometimes a player's skate will accidentally tip it in, but his foot's moving forward. The most minuscule things take goals away. It was one thing if you missed the penalty. I understand that. But on a play that results in a goal, I think that's when you say, as part of that sequence, yeah, I mean, you've seen this, Hawk, when they call a goal back for offsides because the guy's foot is over
right,
the blue
like
line,
the
but not touching
the
ice.
Tip of the skate, yeah.
Exactly. When it's that minuscule, you know, then I think something like that, someone from the league should step in. Because it's one thing if you didn't call a penalty. But the fact is that on that sequence, when most of the Bruins stopped and the St. Louis player who committed the non-penalty was already arguing with the referee why it shouldn't be a penalty. If you go back and look at the video of that also, yeah, this is a black eye for hockey. You know, they already had that extended power play in the San Jose series when it shouldn't have been called a five-minute penalty. And led to an issue there. Yeah, I think if you have eye in the sky in everything, we're seeing it in the World Cup at the highest level of soccer, then I think you should employ it for a situation like that also. I totally agree.
Ira Winderman from the Sun Sentinel, I have to thank you for your appearance today. You are always radio gold, but I learned about the sour cream donut today, and I'm excited to try one. I love sour cream. I love donuts. It sounds like I like a frosting that's sour cream or cream cheese based. It sounds delicious, Ira. I'm tremendously excited.
And we'll talk about this next week as I'm eating my cone with ice with chocolate sprinkles and making sure no one is looking.
Don't do the sprinkles, though, really. And you know, in your heart of hearts, it doesn't add anything to an ice cream cone. It detracts, actually.
But
let's be honest.
Hawk, sometimes you need a little solace when you realize in life you're not John Sally.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I came to that conclusion a long time ago, even before I knew about Sal. Thanks, Ira.
Always a pleasure, my Jewish brother. Thank you, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.